Once all else is said and done, there will be cockroaches, Cher, and Paul Heyman. There will be a single Paul Heyman guy that is made up of all the previous Paul Heyman guys. Yes, it works every time. Welcome back to Monday Night Fake Fights, where I, Garrett Taylor, she, they, force myself to start the intro by doing a weird deep breath, and it's starting to work. And we rewatch the Monday Night Wars and make it everyone else's problem. This week's esteemed guest, my favorite cis hit shit poster, I said, because, you know, obviously we have a biological advantage in shit posting. You had to work harder, and I'm proud of you. All natural.
I overcame my weakness just to be as funny as possible.
Jeff, the Toking Mongoose.
The one and only. Ladies and gentlemen,
the one and only.
I'd like to think I'm Blue Sky's preeminent stoner. I don't know. There might be other ones on there that are up there, but
either way. Apparently there's ones we need to be, like, worried about. Did you see that smoke fleet shit?
Oh, I blocked that shit out so early. I was like, please don't. I have the weed pun stuff not locked down, and I'm not an asshole. Don't ruin my gimmick here.
Right, and I'm sitting here going, I am a Star Trek fan with the name of a Star Trek character who regularly shows my cannabis grows.
I love those posts, by the way. Make my
thank
day.
You. They will be coming back soon. There's a couple seedling babies who are
wonderful,
who are on their way. I'm away from home right now on a dog sit, and hopefully they're surviving.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, this is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful
How did you dog. Get there?
Yeah, how did I get here? Rover. I got here with Rover.
There we go.
I'm being paid to be here. It's wonderful.
Oh, it's supposed to be a cool service.
It makes
some extra scratch.
It's really kind of nice if you can build up a regular client base. It's really nice. And obviously, I'm 3 $10.99s in a skirt. And
right.
this is one of them. And it's not always the most reliable one, but it can come through in a pinch sometimes.
Oh, for sure.
And
you get to meet cool animals, I bet.
All the time. It's great. And I'm such an easy bitch. I just love meeting me a new kitty. I got two doggos and two kitties, and one of them is just so fluffy and, like, looks stoned all the time.
After my own heart.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, like, we have... There's more than one stoned animal on this podcast, folks.
Yeah, if you see me, like, looking over to the side, it's because my cats are fascinated by your voice and keep trying to jump up onto the table here. So I've got to do a little shoe-in action here and there.
Hey, your cats and about 30 people a week. Hey there. But thank you for coming. You and I were kind of talking about it. I feel like I've just known you since Wrestle Sky was a thing, even before that.
Like some early pillars, and you know, I look a little like Jack Barry. What can I say?
Yeah. a little bit. We have jungle mongoose.
I'm not going to do the cat singing. But...
Oh my god! but yeah, no, you were one of the few early people when I put out that cast of wrestling anyone.
Yeah. Like, okay. Well, and that's honestly the reason I have got into microblogging, social media, Twitter, you know, a while ago, was because I got back into wrestling really heavy, and it was just a great way, you know, it's how you stay up, it's how you find stuff, you know when shows are, you find new wrestlers, and through
and
there
Twitter
I kind
was-
of
really great for it because of the video and GIFs too.
Oh, without a doubt. I got into, you know, I really got back into wrestling largely because of Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada in New Japan, and seeing stuff posted on Reddit and eventually Twitter from those, like, that legendary series of matches.
Yeah. I've still only seen two of them. I got to get on that.
It is, you're looking at, obviously. And yeah, there's so much wrestling.
There's so much
things I need to see.
I have to take it all in, though. Like, somebody I was joking on the Skyline earlier today, like, oh god, I have to do 45 minutes of Vince and Lawler, and someone's like, why do you do this to yourself? I'm like, because it exists, and therefore I must take it in.
It's a fun project. I mean, I don't...
It can be grating sometimes, but I'm still happy that I do it, you know?
Wrestling to me is kind of like horror movies, where when they're good, they're great, but when it's bad... It's still usually pretty fun.
Yeah.
There's still stuff to laugh at. There's still just kind of this kookiness. And I mean, the period particularly we're in right now in these early Monday Night Wars.
Cookie's a word. Yeah, you could say cookie. Things are kooks.
I mean, obviously we'll get into it, but I was kind of surprised. I did not, nothing too terrible on what we ended up watching.
No, it has been very worse in the last couple of weeks. And
I lucked out.
Yeah, you really did. This one, Raw just sucked for normal reasons this week. That was great.
I mean, there was some, you know, obviously, like I said, I'm sure we'll get into it farther.
We're
stuff.
Yeah, and I've gotten to the point where I find that I really do block a lot of it out.
I have to keep going.
I think, yeah, no, occasionally something will slip in from Waller. I'm like, the fuck did he just say? I do this because, like, I firmly believe, I've said it before as a goof, but, like, have you ever seen the movie Reign of Fire with...
with the dragons?
With the dragons, yeah.
Yes, I have.
All that shit in theater in my mind was fucking blown. but I love this scene in there, spoilers for, like, a 25-year-old film.
Yeah, pre-game now.
Yeah, right. Oh, fuck, I'm old. I'm turning to dust in front of my mongoose friend. But there's a scene where they are doing story time for the kids, and they are enacting out Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And it's post-apocalyptic. So it's like everything's gone to shit, and they're keeping these stories alive, like the deep lore.
Exactly.
And I feel that way about professional wrestling because where it came from and all that, I firmly believe that in our post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland, there will be grafts. Each village of survivors and wasteland wanderers will have their strongest guy.
They'll cover them in spray tan and send them to the other town.
Exactly. there will be a new territory and like territory system. Like I believe that Paul Heyman will somehow fucking be there. So that's why I do this because I want to know all these things so that when the worst happens, I can tell the stories to the kids, if that makes sense.
Well, the way I've always kind of looked at wrestling is it is this mass cumulative fiction that spans decades and countries and languages and... I mean, it's all the fact that there's this interconnected story that's been going on for, 100 years, really, when you come down to it. Like you look at CML, some of the Mexican promotions that have been going that long, and it's really, it's this continuous thing.
The early days of competitive fighting in Japan in general and bringing the boxers over to fight martial artists, like that was where all that really started. And that was like World War One shit, like World War One, World War Two shit. So like this has been happening forever.
Abe Lincoln was a pro wrestler. It just goes back. And I'm a big nerd for culture. I always have been. Yes. I love having a vocabulary. I love that I can say Mark and what I'm talking about. It's the same thing that really got me into like punk music when I was younger you feel like you're a part of something. There's this language and culture that's just not for everybody necessarily, but the people that are in the know, you're in it together. And it's just this like beautiful thing to me.
And pro wrestling is that kind of culture that managed to somehow still be a subculture while also being mainstream for 100 years and never going away.
Yeah,
even 100%. When it was in a lull, it was still there. It's been a constant. When it's all else is said and done, there will be cockroaches, Cher, and Paul Heyman.
Yeah,
and he will be running some sort of Cronenberg-esque Brock Lesnar CM Punk amalgamation.
You remember the old Mutant League games, Mutant League Pro Wrestling?
There will be a single Heyman guy that is made up of all the previous Paul Heyman guys in just one homunculus ball. I'm looking forward to this future. Outside of the future, we should do the past. Pick your poison, esteemed guest. What do you want to do first, Nitro or Raw?
I started with Nitro on my notes. Let's start with Nitro.
Hey, switching it up, folks. Yeah. We're getting weird here.
I can't scroll down if you want to go the other way.
No.
Yeah.
It is going to be funny, though, because I did it the other way. So the first Nitro note I have is save me, Nitro. Nitro, save me. reign over me with the biggest boys.
I think Garrett and I think we might have opposite takes on this, because
it wouldn't be the first time. Feel free to call me wrong.
it's all subjective, it's all taste and everything, but yeah, especially for this time. And maybe it was maybe it was because it was on shitty Daily Motion, but like the presentation on everything watching Nitro, it's just like, man, this just feels lacking. Like
it's actually, they did better than they had been. The last couple weeks had been rough as far as production goes. I got a kick out. We should talk about that too before we go into it. This Nitro is not on Peacock. I was immediately riveted to find out why I had to go old school and hit Daily Motion like it's 2008. And like, what did Vince not want us to see? So like, I'm immediately
eagle-eyed, like, okay, what was the horrible thing that happened? And I mean, we'll get into it in the main. The only thing I can think of was the power outage.
I have two options.
Possibles? Okay.
I have two. The power outage is one.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like that is enough.
No, so I feel like that must have happened on other stuff that hasn't been taken down.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to come up to it. There's a famous one. There's a whole pay-per-view that they had to film twice because of a thunderstorm taking place. In Your House 8, Beware of Dog, coming soon to the Patreon. that they had to film in two nights and try to splice it together because of a power outage. So it's not that, but I have my thoughts. We'll get into it, because Savage versus Benoit right off the bat.
I was excited for that. I saw those names and it's just like, oh, these are two of the greatest, you know, in-ring workers in the history of professional wrestling. Not two
people that I think I've ever seen fight yet. And no, I was just like, this could be interesting. But first things first, Pepe has red pigtails and a little trad wife dress.
Okay, I was going to say, the dog that fucking Mongo has, that completely took me off guard. You got to understand, like, all this stuff, I grew up watching these events. I was a Monday Night Wars kid. And I fell off with wrestling about 98, 99 before, I was a lapsed fan through high school, got back into it in the 2010s. So a lot of this, I remember from documentaries, I remember from reading like the Wrestle Crap book and stuff like that, but I haven't watched a lot of this in a very long time. So I forgot Mongo had a fucking dog.
Yeah.
It popped up and I was like, okay, we're in this part.
Yeah, there's just a dog that Pepe's been there since episode one. And like, honestly, I'm fine with it. He's my favorite. He's easily, him and Bobby are my favorite parts of the show sometimes. And that's fine.
Oh, okay. I was better than Bischoff on commentary.
Yeah, right. That being said, that dog voted for Trump. But I mean, look at him.
Canceled.
Yeah, Pepe canceled. But we also get Flair, Bagwell tonight, tag team match, Sting and Luger versus Road Warriors. I'm like, all right, this sounds
That's classic WCW to me, particularly, you know, Sting, Luger, Road Warriors. Yeah. That's when I think WCW, even NWA, those are the names that spring right to mind. And Flair, obviously, too.
Yeah, and we get a ways into the match before I remember. I'm skipping ahead my notes a little bit. But 100%. They're fighting each other. I'm like, wait, these fuckers have been in War Games.
Yeah.
Like these guys were in War Games before the WCW was the name of the company.
Yeah, I was going to say, old, like, dusty ones.
In the old NWA days. And, like, I was like, oh, fuck. So, like, no, they're... This match ought to fuck, and we'll get there. I had a good time, but
it was a high point of the show for me.
Oh yeah,
and for Bagwell too. Like I said,
And again, a world title match to start the show. I have to say, Eric, it's not special the third time you do it. Just saying.
When you can just kind of feel like this is that point where WCW is kind of floundering for stuff. Like, you can see the seeds of where the NWO needed to come from. It just feels like flashbacks to New Generation stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the Hogan stuff with him just bringing all his people in. I mentioned it later, Paul Orndorff just shows up randomly. I had no idea he was even in the company at this point.
There's context for that that might help make that a little more sense.
I imagine. But yeah, he just like appeared out of nowhere. I was like, oh, this is just, where's Gorilla Monsoon going to be on commentary here?
Yeah, oh my God. No, he's going to be leaving. I think leaving. He's like hurt. He's done. He's retired. I think they were just trying to tie up loose ends there. But no, they were doing really well with the ratings for a while.
Yep.
And then Vince got scared and started putting Softcore Sonny on and showing blood again and doing the billionaire Ted skits. Mm-hmm. And I think it started to shift again. Of
the proto Attitude Era stuff starting to come around.
Yeah, he started to try, you know, like I described it a couple months back, of like he's turning up on the notch that says ultraviolence. Like, yeah.
Yeah, how far can I go? But that, to me, both these shows we watched, what makes it such an interesting period for me is it's such a precursor period. Like, yeah, we are right before the NWO. We're right before, like, Austin starts getting featured. Mm-hmm. We're a little bit before, you know, Hell in a Cell between Taker and Mank. The sea changes that really kind of went from that, like, all right, what is that golden era Hogan stuff that everyone was trying to recapture to, like, the new lifeblood of what would be, you know, the peak of professional wrestling in America, yeah, by most metrics?
No, absolutely the golden era. As much as I will go out of my way to say it as often as possible, simply because I know it pisses Hogan off.
Noble goal.
Right? No, Steve Austin is the highest drawing guy to ever do it. Like, and in the history of it, by number, and like Hogan doesn't want to hear that.
No,
but it's just simply true. And he did it. He did it in like 2 years, whereas Hogan did it in 20.
Exactly.
So yeah, go fuck yourself, Terry. cracking together the Steve Weisers, even though
I was saying, now Austin hangs out with cats on Instagram, and it's adorable.
Oh my God! You know
he's not involved in a fascist political party, so he's winning.
Which is honestly fucking amazing.
If you go back to like 97 and you showed me those two and you're like, okay, who's going to be the like hardline member of the Republican Party in 30 years? You're probably guessing Austin.
All right, we're going to get this out of the way then. I'm just going to go ahead and say, because I feel it has to be said. Steve Austin, he's that guy who could have gone like full far right. You listen to some of his earlier podcasts and he says some squiggly shit.
I'm not surprised.
Oh, he one time said something to Paul Heyman on the Broken Skull session where you could see Paul Heyman go
kind of wince a little bit.
Well, just goes like, he kind of says, well, like, you mean serious?
I'm sure, and you know, if I'm guessing, I'm assuming that's probably where Austin leans politically, but he's not a figurehead for it or anything.
Well, no, but here's the thing, is it's not that he has those beliefs, it's that he is a fucking golden retriever puppy.
Exactly.
He will go where he is led. and I love you, Steve. You're kind of a himbo. You're a beautiful, beautiful man. but like that, so like someone at some point, I feel like got a hold of him. Was like, puppies, cats. You want to be a cat guy? And he's like, fucking hell yeah, cat.
I can drink my beer while I'm doing it, right? Yeah, all right. Yeah,
cats like beer. Yeah, it's free range kitties up still in the ranch.
Is podcast even still going at this point? Is it, or is it
his
pretty much
actual podcast? I think has been done for a while, but he's been doing
skull sessions or whatever it was.
Yeah. He's been hosting like weird reality shows on like History Channel and shit and getting that bag.
Which it's like, for him being that like peak, you know, professional wrestler in terms of popularity, he never really was able to translate it into like star power the way that, you know, obviously Dwayne Johnson or Batista or anybody did. I mean, he never was above like direct to DVD action movies. He was in like, I think he was maybe in an Expendables or something, but
The Condemned. Yeah, he did The Condemned.
Condemned, that's right.
Yeah, and he was in The Expendables, but he didn't have a huge career with that shit. No. I don't think he really wanted it. I've actually listened to a lot of his show just because it's fascinating, and like honestly I believe that weird podcaster Steve Austin was the happiest Steve Austin.
I could see that. He's just talking about the business with the boys, like
that's just it. He's a mark himself, and all my favorite wrestling personalities are marks themselves. As much as I've come to get annoyed with FTR, for a while there, I really loved FTR because their special interest is tag team wrestling. That's just it.
They love professional wrestling. Kevin Owens, I've heard the same thing about it. He's just a dude who is hardcore about wrestling. I remember hearing something where Sami Zayn, he has other interests. He likes music and stuff like that. But Kevin Owens, it is pretty much just his family and like Attitude Era Pro Wrestling. And that is all he cares about. And I'm like, I love that.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of my favorite workers are like that. A lot of my favorite, like Paul Heyman, was just a huge fucking fan.
Oh yeah,
who got himself out, back paid.
As I say, yeah, he started out as a photographer, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, as a teenager, yeah. He's just got himself backstage, and you see him like.
As much as, you know, he has his issues, Jim Cornette was the same way. He really he started out as a kid because he loved wrestling and worked his way into it, and he was good for a while.
Yeah, and as much as Jim Cornette is an awful piece of shit, I respect the fact that he's also the greatest living wrestling historian. And I can't take that away from him. And yeah, it's for the same reason.
I used to love his podcast before AEW existed, if I'm being
honest. Yeah, because I've listened to it here or there. What the fuck is up his ass?
Why does he hate them so much?
I don't get it.
There's just this, and it's been said before, but I feel like there's just this cottage industry of outrage that has spread, not even just in wrestling, but, you know, basically online content creation in general. And they realize that it's a lot, you're going to get more people listening, slagging something off than talking positively about something, which is a shame.
I think I would rather just never have a huge following than find a reason to be shit. Like, if I think something sucks, I'll say it sucks, but I'm not going to go out of my way.
But if somebody showed up at my door with a $20,000 check and was like, hey, call Tony Khan a bitch, I'm going to be thinking about it for a second. I'm not going to lie.
You know, now you mention he's kind of got bitch qualities. It's, you know,
20 grand.
20 grand. I don't know. Maybe.
You're my favorite American wrestling right now.
But we love you, Tony.
I'm sure he's listening.
I'm pretty sure Effie was just healing on you. Maybe don't take it so hard. I've lost completely the train of thought, and that's wonderful.
We were talking about Mongo's dog.
I was gonna say that's a good thing. That means we can get back to the notes. Yeah. Again, a world title match. Benoit's coming out to a New Kids on the Block sounding song that was kind of wild. I realize it's Daily Motion, so we're probably getting the actual broadcast, not the
non-edited. Yeah.
So this is the real music. He didn't actually walk out to the Horseman theme. He had his own weird song.
I would have preferred the Horseman theme, to be honest.
I'm always going to prefer the Horseman theme.
Those Horseman t-shirt, he was wearing one. I think Arn was wearing one, like when they're in their tag match. That just looked incredibly cheap to me. I think I wrote down, like, Pillman's the only one who actually looks cool because he's not coming out in this iron-on t-shirt.
Pillman is on a jag as far as fucking fashion. T-boy swag. He is on some gender shit, and it keeps happening. We'll get there.
I'm terrible with time.
Linear time is bullshit. We should be abolishing it anyways. Macho Man's Popping Circumstance hits. How comes Florida Man with Woman and Miss Elizabeth? Here's my first clue for those who Benoit Blanking, if you will.
that was very clever.
Thank you. Benoit and Nancy in the same segment. This is my first, like, okay. Now, but that being said, this is going to happen more because they have a whole arc that plays out, and I've seen it on Peacock, so it can't be that. But that was my first clue. I'm like trying to pay attention. I was like, is this going to be it? But Savage is getting the crowd into things. They tie up, and I was wondering how this was going to go because they're so different styles of wrestler, and
kind of just went to Benoit doing everything for a while.
It's just like a messy tie up. They're not really locked up in their hitting.
They're rolling around like gators. It was crazy.
It was all, and it looks sloppy and real, like a Benoit match. And I was like, holy shit. Okay, they're going to do that. Yep. And he takes the upper hand early, sends Macho outside, the crowd over the guardrail like he likes. He loves to go visit the people in the front row, hit playing the hits. Yeah. But back in the ring right away with just intensity. And he sends Macho off the ropes and takes his head off, just takes it off. And it's ugly. It's sloppy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think Macho had it in him.
Macho, I mean, he spends the first 90% of this match selling. Like, it is Benoit in control for...
And not his usual selling either.
No, like, it wasn't. It was realistic.
It wasn't clean. Yeah.
No, it blended with Benoit's whole, you know, killer, like actual legit vibe.
I was gonna say, oh god, oh god,
killer would have been poor choice.
I'm gonna bleep that one.
It's understandable.
I am my own editor. I'm not gonna remember. Yeah.
the rabid Wolverine. Genuinely tough guy who.
Well, they call him Canadian Purple. You know, it's like literally,
and he broke Sabu's neck, wasn't it?
Yeah, I forget who it was. He legit.
It was in ECW. I want to say Sabu. He like dropped him right on his head or something.
It wouldn't. Oh God, Sabu's probably broken. How many times has Sabu broken his neck in ECW?
Every other show.
Yeah, right. It's really awesome seeing Macho Man have this kind of match. All the ugliness is coming from his selling. He's rolling with it. And he's making this into just a barn burner without really doing much. It's amazing.
Yeah. The people love him. I mean, he is crazy how I put down and I know everyone said it, but how the hell did Vince say, like, hey, I don't need you wrestling anymore. I'm just going to put you on commentary. Like, Macho was over. He still had plenty in the tank, clearly. I just don't understand this mindset.
He's still, like, I think technically injured probably a little bit. His arm was technically still hurt a little bit at this point. And, like, he'll fucking go. I don't know if he should for his mental health, but he can.
And he's still, like I said, wildly over. Like, I mean, Benoit, you know, he's a lacking in charisma kind of guy, but he had the crowd booing him. And I think that was largely down to how much they were behind Macho. Like,
absolutely. And he was, if you're that behind Macho and you have this guy who is just killing your man, killing him, that made for an amazing match. Heenan at one point says that woman uses her brains. He knows all about brains. Bischoff says, yeah, you've read all about him.
Solid. I was so happy to see Bobby Heenan pop up on commentary. He is, if I had to pick a favorite commentator of all time, he's in the conversation. Genuinely, I think maybe the funniest person in professional wrestling history. No,
nobody, we say it all the time, and it's because it's true. No one has his timing. No one had his natural, no one understood the assignment quite like Bobby Heenan. I got a couple good ones from him this week, but that one pleased me. Yeah, you've read all about him. Like, Bischoff actually with a retort. Well done, boy. Back in the ring, though, Benoit gets the huge flying headbutt on Savage. It takes 10 years off of his and two other people's lives. Screaming into a pillow. But this match continues to cook. Bischoff calls something a back leg drop kick, and my brain just started thinking about it in skating terms.
Yeah.
Like, are some drop kicks can be hit switch? Some wrestlers wrestle goofy footed. These guys wrestle goofy footed. All right, Benoit keeps in control, though. Macho gets a few occasional hits to the body from his knees, and that's most of the offense for the whole match.
Just about the gist.
Is him trying to get up, basically. He manages to trip Chris up, send him flying to the outside. Crowd gets real hyped.
I almost felt like that kind of brought him back to life once he just tossed him outside. Suddenly everybody exploded. Exactly. Not that they were down before, but that just a little move like that really won him back.
And that's speaks to how, like you're saying, how much you're behind him, because it's just that little spark of life. That the little spark of like maybe, and then he squashes it right away. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, fuck with them, fuck with the audience, make them sad.
And I think those are two guys who know how to structure matches. They know how to build it to get that crowd investment behind it, particularly Macho Man. I mean, he is a history of it. He's meticulous for making his matches laid out, knowing how things are going to go across, and he makes it work.
Yeah. No, and he really did, and it's so good. But now we come up to, after a few tries getting the upper hand, Macho gets sent back outside, and this is where I think this is why the episode was pulled.
Okay.
I am pretty sure Benoit gets a back concussion here, and that's why. Randy is leaning against the guardrail. Benoit goes for the dive through the ropes, and Macho moves, and I'm guessing that... I've seen him do this before where he catches himself on the guardrail so that he doesn't actually hurt himself.
Yeah.
But this one, he just misses it. He comes up. He came up too early to hit the rail, too far for the mat.
Yeah. No, he just flopped.
And his face first directly on the smallest strip of concrete. Yeah. Like, he couldn't have done that worse.
Yeah, it was the worst possible spot to land. And that's a very good point, considering how you know, what he did, that a lot of people believe it's tied to that CTE. So that might be something they wanted to distance from.
That's why I'm saying, because and the way the rest of this goes, like, he was,
it goes hurt. Right to finish after this, doesn't it? I mean,
because he probably shouldn't be moved, but Randy throws him back in. He hits the big elbow on his back instead.
He was on his belly for it,
which happens sometimes. But really, I think Benoit was like not. He's like, I don't know what's going on. You know, so instead of going for the pin, Flair comes out and distracts him. Clusterfuck happens. Woman makes her heel turn and attacks Macho Man, holds him for Flair. Awesome. Out comes the rest of the Horsemen to stop Macho. The match is thrown out, blah, blah, blah. Terry, again with his magic wand of the steel chair, chases everyone out.
Oh,
yeah. It was a setup.
It never looks intimidating when he has that thing.
No. Which it should, though, because like when he does get hits on, he does not give a fuck with that thing, and it's terrifying. Harry, he's just like, oh, I'm gonna actually kill someone with this. And I feel like the first time he did it, and then the next week they weren't as hard, because I feel like someone was like, you can't actually
backstage. She's like, all right, let's ease up a little bit here,
buddy, brother. But sure enough, like, Benoit got the fuck out of there off camera.
Yeah, no, now that you're saying this, he really disappeared when everybody else came on out.
And I feel like they focused on everyone else so that they could get him out of there, because he was not, like, no way he was okay. Like you said, the sound of his head hitting the fucking concrete.
It was like somebody dropped a coconut.
Oh, my God. So I'm guessing that's probably why they pulled it, because it's like,
so far that's tracking the most out of
because when you're the company who eventually hired this guy and let all this go down, you don't want to have evidence of all the brain damage. So it's like, did we need to have this one on the network? No, we can get rid of it.
Yeah, especially because it's a fairly inconsequential Nitro. There's nothing here that
other than the woman heel turn. Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Savage gets taken out, so Gene and Terry have exposition time and talk about nothing happening. Hogan gets lost in the sound of his own voice, dude, and brothering, and Flair sneaks up behind him. It tries to rip his eye cut back open. They're like, okay, all right, this has just been a wild first 20 minutes.
And I was thinking, I did notice people in the crowd, and I'm sure the sound was sweetened, that when Flair was coming up and attacking Hogan, I saw people cheering out there.
Oh, yeah, no, they're done. Everyone is.
Yeah, and that's where I kind of say the early... the seedlings of the NWO stuff being planted, them being like, okay, the Hogan experiment is not going to, we're not recreating 1989 Hulk Hogan. So what can we do to work into this vibe that we have now of the people turning against him and the big, you know, famous heel turn?
Yeah. And it's been so fun to watch. They initially tried to tweener him early on in Nitro. And that's how we got Hulk Hogan Sephiroth posting with a goddamn sword. And then they pulled him out and they're like, he's red, yellow again. Then people cheered. And I think they were like, good, we fixed it. And it's like, no, they're cheering because the Sephiroth posting was so bad.
Yeah, it's ready to be finished.
They're ready for that to be done. So they're happy that it's over. They're not happy that it's him again. And now they're starting to realize, oh, wait, no, they still, it's like they faked themselves out.
This is still our Southern wrestling audience. This is not like it was. You know, the grand experiment to bring Hogan over, and it made its money for a while, but it just wasn't something that was feasible. And like, I mean, they did, you know, I'll give Bischoff credit. He ripped off New Japan and turned it into something that was monumental and did change American wrestling.
He really did. He really did. And ripping off New Japan works for so many people. It really does.
Especially back in the day, it's not like anybody could really see. They're like, oh, I can't believe he came up with this.
Yeah, I'm not saying this in the middle of the second C2. I'm sorry.
I'm happy for more round robin tournaments. It's something I feel American wrestling's missed forever. Exactly. And I'm getting Okada versus Beast Mordos. I can't complain.
Come on now. Like, this is going to be a good time. But back in 96, the Giant comes out to hit Hulk on the back with a chair, finally. Mm-hmm. And then out comes Texas Senator Ted Cruz, longtime friend of Hogan. The Zodiac tries to get the Giant to lay off, and eventually gets Flair and Giant out of there. Macho comes back out and immediately blames Miss Elizabeth. It's just like, all right, now I do a domestic violence. Yeah. And like, 2 weeks. It took two
weeks. Still, it's that same stuff that's kind of running back from, you know, golden era, you know, Hulk and Macho mega power stuff. It just feels like they're really trying to recreate that magic, and it just does not hit the same in WCW in 96.
It did for like a show. We did the Clash of the Champions on the Patreon, and that initial pop for Elizabeth coming out, like,
that was big.
And it was like, all right, I see what you're doing. I like it. I like it. Yeah. And then they don't, and then they just, and we got 2 weeks before they're starting to do the breakup, and I'm like, all right, y'all are just like speed running the classics here. Okay.
So Garrick, you've been watching it. Is Dungeon of Doom a thing at this point?
Has been, unfortunately, for a while.
It still is. Okay. I saw Zodiac Ed Leslie, and I knew, you know, Kevin Sullivan with the Giant, but I didn't see, you know, crusty old Iakea being actually running stuff.
I think that the Iakea stuff, I think they're fine. We're getting to the final days of the Gooners.
I figured it had to be close.
Yeah, God, not close enough. But Kevin's still doing it.
Such cheesy shit.
Yeah, it's we're coming up into, we're really getting into that, because now technically the Doomers and the Four Horsemen are aligned, and that's going to lead to first Taskmaster's upset with Pullman that we'll get into. Pillman, not Bill Pullman. That'd be amazing. Bill Pullman should have been
Russell Sullivan in the '90s.
Holy shit. Oh my God. All right. Maybe it was
with Independence Day at this time.
Yes.
I want to say that was 96.
I need Celebrity Deathmatch to come back. specifically.
I'll allow it.
Yeah, I'll allow it. Speaking of, Hogan finally juices again. He allows it. The camera catches a little bit of it.
I even noticed at that point.
Yeah, they made a bigger deal of it than they totally tried to Streisand it. Should we start calling that Aubrey-ing it because of Drake? Like, I feel like that's going to happen. Like, you're just making it worse by drawing attention to it. Oh, God. It's been a weird
week. I don't think Streisand ever sued anybody. He's taking it to new levels.
That's so amazing. Oh, God. But, yeah, up next, though, Hugh Morris and Kevin Sullivan, as we were talking about, against Pillman and Arn. First, we get a little bit of WCW magazine acid times for the week. That's great. Yeah. I have a
the old ads did take me back. That was a bit of nostalgia. Like, I remember
this. I can't help but love it. But every time, I'm just like the keeping his voice freaks me out every fucking time.
It's a bit disconcerting.
Taskmaster says he's the king of madness. I say he's the king of Duncans, and of course, Hugh Morris. Things that other people find horrifying, he finds funny. Can you imagine? What an original character.
Apparently things he finds funny, I find tedious.
Yeah. We get a quick look at...
He's a good worker, but God, I just hate this character.
But here's the thing with Bill DeMott. The real name of
him. The one thing, yeah.
The one thing. And again, fuck linear time. I'm going around my notes here, but I got to say it. The thing about him...
I think I know what you're saying.
How are you going to be so racist and so homophobic that you get fired from the World Wrestling Federation for being too racist and too homophobic?
I mean, it's just impressive.
I can't even be mad. Yeah, am I?
And I will say, I mean, he hits a hell of a moonsault.
Yeah, I got it. It's fucking pretty and terrifying.
That was clean.
Very clean. But gosh, Hugh Morris. We get a quick look at last week with Kevin and Pullman having impact play, scene with the belt. Here comes the horseman. Pillman continues with the T-boy swag, as I said earlier. This time he's added a classy walking cane.
Oh, and that vest. I mean, it's just a look.
And
it's
with
Arn in the T-shirt next to him. It looks like a dad taking his like weird kid to the mall.
And the kid's like way too cool for school.
And like, walk 15 feet behind me, Dad. I don't want people to see us.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and the dad's worried because he thinks his son's hanging out with Quirs. Yeah, it's just lovely stuff. What's
a hot topic? Question now. Yes. Is Arn short for Arnold?
I have no fucking clue.
Doesn't? Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's got to be. He could have gone by Nold, I guess, but like,
oh my god, Arn is just Arn is double A. Oh god. Every time I see him, I'm just like, oh, I love that guy. But also, how is that man 38 years old at this time?
Oh, he's one of those guys, though. I think he probably looked like he was 45 years old from the time he was 12 until he was, you know, now, until he trying to pull a gun on Cody or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. As a girl with a 5 head, I feel okay saying that that man started losing his hair at 20. There's no way. Right.
Yeah,
I recognize
the man. He's never been ID'd for anything. Like he could have bought beer when he was in elementary school,
and probably did. Like I mean,
having an oldie, having a lot of fun.
Yeah, having a lot of fun, dropping third graders on their heads with brain busters. Let's go. So yeah, Dungeon of Doom Joker laughs off Pillman's chops, gets him in a big old military press slam, and one for Arn
that
as well.
That was good too. I was gonna say.
Yeah, he's a big old dude.
Four of these guys are workers. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I mean, as goofy as the Dungeon of Doom stuff is, Sullivan can go in the ring. Morris can go in the ring. Pillman and Arn are classics.
Yeah. Kevin, I made myself watch some older Kevin Sullivan recently. The old,
like Florida stuff? I mean,
And even older than that, when he was still trying to like be like just a straight wrestler. Like,
oh, so before the satanic crazy shit.
That dude was built terrifyingly, just a brick shit house of a guy. And it's so funny seeing him as Taskmaster, and I just Boston Bob, like every time, just what the fuck happened, my guy? But it's all right. We get to find out about respect match, though. Kevin Sullivan strapped to Pillman. First person to say, I respect you wins. This is famously real life beef coming through because Kevin is the booker. And at the time, what Kevin doesn't realize is that Pillman is desperately trying to get fired, which is what we know.
He wrote Bischoff into it. We're like giving him a release under the presumption he was cut. And I'm like, how fucking stupid do you have to be, Bischoff? Like,
pretty stupid. So like Pillman eventually gets his release, and he does it by like working the fuck out of Bischoff in a way that is truly masterful.
Legend of Brian Pillman starts here.
Exactly.
Then you get his ECW stuff where he really kind of was doing all the work shoots, and then into the loose cannon WWF, the gun stuff. Yeah.
He works himself out of the WCW contract. He goes to ECW and builds up his legend in like a week. Yep. You know, like he just shows up and makes it so that Vince has to notice. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is history.
And again, to me, this is that kind of proto attitude era, proto late 90s stuff that really was being fermented in ECW. Which, by the way, I was so bummed out. Like, when you first told me what we were watching, I was like, oh, 96 WCW. At least I'll get to see some cruiserweights and some luchadors. It's like, no, this is like immediately before all the cool shit was still in ECW and hadn't been poached yet.
No, like, they got some of it in. It just hadn't completely taken over.
Was Jericho over yet?
Jericho wasn't here yet, but we had Sabu week run early on in Nitro.
Yeah.
He was on like the second episode of Nitro. So like Sabu had a run. He had a really great match with Alex Wright of all people.
Hey, Wright could go and he could dance.
Oh yeah. He's got the moves, baby. Das moves, Das Wunderkind.
I was going to say, we need more wrestlers who have their gimmick being German, but then I realized there are two in WWE right now.
Wrong kind of German. I want Euro trash, not very vaguely, thinly veiled fascist. You know, like.
I want the guy at the end of that Simpsons episode who bought the flying hellfish paintings from Grandpa, rolls up in the Ferrari blaring techno.
Yes, I have to go off on the Autobahn. Yes, I want the return of that German wrestler. Sorry, Guter.
As goofy as it was, he was solid in the ring. And he was one of those foundational cruiserweight guys that really kept the undercard alive.
Second or third generation wrestler. I will absolutely constantly talk about how great Alex Wright is.
Yeah, I'm an Alex Wright. Yeah, I even liked Berlin. I used to listen to industrial music too.
We'll get there, folks.
That's a little ways.
Wright is in WCW for the long haul, and that's not good for anybody.
No.
It gets weird, folks. But yeah. the respect match. It's the real life beef of Pillman trying to get fired. He wants to like jump ship. He's trying to act out so Sullivan will fire him, basically.
Yeah.
Sullivan thinks he's going to put the young lion in his place as a veteran, and he wants to do it on pay-per-view. Yeah. And like Kevin Sullivan really thought that that's what he was doing because he's old school, you know, and like from the shoots that I've seen and stuff like that, like he really like that's what was going on. Pillman was trying to get fired. Sullivan just thought he's this young guy acting up and I just got to put him in his place. And he ends up playing him. But, you know, bold move, Cotton. We'll see if that works out for you.
That's I'd actually watched the Super Brawl coming up fairly recently. So a lot of this, as I was going, it was like a second I saw Pillman and Sullivan coming out, I was like, oh, it's the Booker Man stuff. Oh, okay. It's the
Booker Man stuff. And not Booker T, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's not even on this show. I loved Harlem Heat. I was bummed they weren't here either.
Yeah, they'll get there at some point.
They're on the Patreon.
Again, coming soon to Patreon. Arn Anderson, meanwhile, shows me why I love his ass. He hits a spine buster on Hugh Morris that would kill a normal person. Yeah. Thankfully, though, Hugh isn't normal in any sense of the word. No. Bobby is so good, though. He says Arn is directing traffic in there, but three of these guys are driving without a license.
It's that sharpness. It's just that, like,
he's
little
too good
quick.
For this shit. Yeah, he's even at this point,
you could tell he was already kind of checked out anyway. He's still carrying commentary. Because as much as I love Mongo, it's almost like he's just doing this Dusty Rhodes kind of shtick that doesn't have quite the same, you know, vibe
he's
to it.
He's trying to be the yokel. I have learned to love my Mongo because I have accepted that he is an agent of chaos. And in that sense, he absolutely is doing the Dusty bit because Dusty also makes no sense. I would have it no other way, baby.
And I think it doesn't help that, again, I do not like Eric Bischoff on commentary. He seems to me like somebody who wants to be a game show host but is lacking the charisma. Like, he's trying to do the polished thing, but
he the fucking leather jackets aren't working for you, and he's still going to ride that forever.
I love Tony Schiavone. I'm just constantly doing the, like, where's Tony? Please bring him up.
That's been the hardest part of these early ones is no Tony on Nitro and no JR on Raw. And it's this is rough.
It's a weird kind of transitional period for me where it's like a lot of the institutions of this time are not quite in place. They're falling into place, but it's not quite there.
Yep. Mongo says that letting Pillman be a horseman is like loading a gun and giving it to a kid. And I think, not yet, Mongo. Not yet. He does that in the Fed. Give it about a year.
chilling view of things to come.
I remember when that happened. I mean, that's around when I started watching Raw. Pillman pulled a gun on Austin.
I remember being in elementary school and like going in the next day, and that was where everybody was watching wrestling.
I just remember my dad being... And I remember my dad just being like, wrestling didn't have home invasions.
Carl Gotch never came in with a revolver.
Yeah, yeah. You know, maybe he should. Bert Gagne would have. You know he would have. He's got that energy.
It's a sea change of that time. The whole extreme culture of the 90s pervading everything, and particularly wrestling.
Yeah, well, it's getting there. It's not quite there yet. No. For the next like 15 seconds of this match, it's just Pillman refusing to work with Kevin. I feel like I'm watching it, and I'm like, I feel like it's just Pillman's just not doing.
No, you can see the seeds of that dissension kind of going on.
Yeah, and like so, Arn like gets them separated and drags Sullivan over to the stage curtain. And it looks like he's going to pile drive Sullivan, but someone hits him with a broomstick from behind the curtain. And for a second there, I was like, okay, this is corny, but it could be an interesting start of a mystery. Okay.
Storyline here.
Yeah. So Sullivan makes it back to the ring. He hits Pillman with the strap again. The match gets thrown out. Second one in a row, which I did not like.
I know it's, and I was thinking that I'm like, it is 90s TV wrestling. I can't be expecting too many definitive finishes here. There's going to be schmazes. There's going to be DQs, countouts.
Two in a row.
Yeah, especially when one of them is a world title match.
Yeah, for shame, Nitro. You're better than this. You were better than this last week. I know I was there. So the match gets thrown, and clearly everyone hates all of this. Pillman, again, like, no selling, and just leaves. Even though Hugh gets the awesome moonsault in for good measure, you know.
Good, at least fit that. And like I said, that was gorgeous.
Gotta hand it to him.
Yeah, without a doubt. That's about the only thing I will, but.
Yeah, right. I find myself giggling because, like, as they're leaving, Kevin Sullivan looks at the camera like he's about to start talking, and Bischoff's like, let's get out of here, go to commercial.
He's covering his ass.
And sure enough, he starts trying to talk. It's like, go, 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 go. Like, yeah, no, absolutely. Do not let that man talk. We get promo for Super Brawl, and then American Male Buff Bagwell gets to fight.
I love that theme song. I'm not going to lie.
It's one of the greatest things to ever fucking happen in wrestling.
I burst out into a grin when it started playing. I'd say Buff's pretty over, too. Like, people were digging the American males at this time.
They were, and I kind of brought up, too, that, like, you know, well, first of all, yeah, Flair comes out, woo. We have to get it out of the way. Paul Orndorff hits the commentary booth.
Yeah.
He says, funny thing about Payback, you never know when it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And leaves, and Heenan's like, oh, he swept him off his feet, he's cleaning up around here, and like they're trying to he's the one who hit Arn.
That's literally just clicking for me.
Yeah, that's how bad it was. Had to explain it and you still didn't get it, but that's all nice and good. Now we know that Paul Orndorff never has to be on TV again with no loose ends. So it wasn't the beginning of something, it was the end of something.
I wonder if it was this something that was supposed to be paid off maybe farther into that, you know, respect match, and it fell apart when Pillman went into business for himself.
What I think happened here, actually, I think this is it's something we've touched on a few times. Paul Orndorff got legit hurt. It wasn't his neck, though. It was something in his, like, his shoulder or his elbow or something.
I know he had the thing where, like, one of his arms became much weaker than the other from an injury.
And this is what happened, and it ends up leading to him retiring. The reason they initially had the Horseman spike him on his head on the concrete and put him in a brace was to get him off TV to find out what was wrong. He found out what was wrong and that he's not coming back. So they had to do this to tie up that loose end of, like, we got to write it off that he got his revenge. Now we never have to think about it.
Okay, so in conclusion to that. That makes sense then.
Yeah, so this was absolutely them trying to literally just tie this up in, like, no one fucking cared.
I didn't even catch those little commentary references to that. I was so confused because, like I said, I got coming in blind. I was like, why is Orndorff coming out?
Yeah, the only reason I caught it is because I've been doing this to myself.
You've been following along.
I was able to be like, oh, okay. Boo. It was
paid off for somebody 30 years later.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, congrats. Congrats, Kevin. It made sense to someone 30 years later. You got Jeff.
Good booking, Bischoff.
Great booking. So yeah, woo. Flair is showing us why they say he could get a good match out of a mop. The mopping question this week being Marcus Bagwell.
I wrote broomstick because the old Flair could get a good match out of a broomstick, and
this he is did. It. He yeah. did. He,
and I know he made this is a cliche, but God, I love Flair's ropes when he came out. It's hard for me not to just be like, oh my God, I want that.
This is 2 weeks in a row, Jeff, that he did the pink number with the purple flowers, and I'm just
beautiful.
I need it for mine. Okay. Yeah. it's the thing. So, like, yeah, no, he's on a fashion thing, and he brought out Woman, and I love Woman forever. God, Nancy was just one of a fucking kind. Mm-hmm. So, that was great. And it's like, okay, this is going to be good. Because, like, here's the thing. When your entire thing is that you have a signature ways in which you get the shit beat out of you, you're going to make whatever your opponent is look great. And that's why Ric Flair has that reputation, is because all of his best shit is him getting beat up. So you're going to make it. Yeah,
it's the Flair flop. It's the failed move off the top rope. It's the
spots. Yep, the begging off, the flipping over the turnbuckles and then getting knocked off on the floor. All that shit.
We'll get to it later, but Shawn Michaels, HBK, very similar.
Same thing, absolutely. Yeah. His whole thing is getting beat up. And that's fine. Yeah. It worked. They turned it.
Great matches came from it.
Yeah, and they turned it into a huge career.
I did not expect a Buff Bagwell match to be like one of my favorite things from all of this.
Yeah, no, he looks great in there.
And over, like I said, people were loving him.
Yeah, and I feel, and this is I put this in there too. I feel like this is why he was able to maintain a lot of babyface heat for a while, even when his wrestling got progressively worse.
Yeah, and no, you're right. He was over for a long time. I mean, he's not Buff at this point. He's still Marcus Alexander, I believe. But even people loved Buff Bagwell. They were all about him when he was against Scott Steiner.
I think this is Marcus Bagwell era, which is coming up into Buff. But in the year or two before this, he was Marcus Alexander.
So the middle name's dropped at this point. Okay,
the middle name to make.
He's in this Cryalysis period before he was the larva of Marcus Alexander. Now he's the Cryalysis of Marcus, and he's going
American male. The catalyst of his American maleification.
Exactly. Yeah. With a giant top hat.
God, we'll get there. Mongo says they have more action than the law allows tonight, and I wonder if maybe that's a little true, seeing as Peacock
was called Mongo Mongoose.
Oh God, did I? Oh no,
I'm getting into your head, Garrett.
You're getting into my head. You've lived there. There's toking within my brain. Bagwell manages a second rope suplex. That's also very pretty. So again, he goes for the slingshot splash, but Flair gets the knees up, and I'm like, oh, winding it down. Sure enough, Flair struts. He hits figure four parentheses finisher. Yeah. And Bagwell holds on for like 10 seconds or so. That's the end of that. So we get an actual ending, but Flair is like...
Yeah, decisive finish, I was going to say.
Yep, but Flair's like that. No, I want the clusterfucky. So he keeps the hold in, knocks the ref down. Macho Man comes out for the save, and Flair bolts. LOL. One of my favorite things this week is Bobby woos into commercial like he does.
That was really good.
And then it comes back into the what a rush.
Still going.
And I was like, that transition popped me. That was fantastic. Beautiful.
And I pop hard for the ooh, what a rush. I always will.
Road Warriors
Legion of Doom are one of the things that got me into professional wrestling as a child. I remember going to Blockbuster, and I think it was the Royal Rumble 92 VHS that had the illustration of all the wrestlers on it. And I saw the Road Warriors with the spiky stuff in the face paint. And I was a little kid. I was just like, that looks fucking cool.
I want to go there. Yeah.
Yeah. I rented that. And after that, I started watching Monday Night Raw because my dad would let me stay up late. And I mean, that iconic look and just seeing them just blew my mind as a child.
And then when I'm watching them back now as an adult and you get it. It's the fucking Road Warriors. The blue shoulder pads are still a little weird for me, but still.
There is a vibe to them up until really the mid, late 90s when they kind of went back to WWF for a little bit where things fell apart. But
Mohawk was falling apart. Yeah.
Yeah. Life.
It's unfortunate. but very much so. We're still seeing what they absolutely fucking were, though. And it's so good. I can't wait to see how Lex fails Sting this time. That's the ongoing story. Sting and Animal start things off ready to play some hits, and I was like, all right.
Oh, you skipped a Man Called Sting too, which is another one of my all-time favorite themes.
All-time.
That's one thing about this show is it was just like, oh my god, this music! I forgot all about these jams.
It is a Man Called Sting.
Yeah, it's classic.
It don't get much better than that.
I love this era of Sting too. Surfer Sting is what I grew up on.
And again, we're in liminal Sting spaces because he's growing out the hair. So he's like Surfer Sting, but right now he's in confused Sting because he keeps winning and he doesn't know why. And I'm kind of learning to love it, but Lex goes for a pile driver simply so Hawk can no sell it.
And then the camera caught him not connecting at all, and commentary had to be like, he never gets it. That's the point.
Yeah.
But again, it's an iconic spot. I mean, that to me is ultimate Road Warriors, is that pop back up. It just blows your mind at the time.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, when's the last time I saw Lex go for a pile driver? Oh, it's Hawk.
They're doing the thing.
Yeah, so like Lex scurries away. Sting gets back in, and like, again, watching the Road Warriors as an adult, Hawk chops the piss out of him.
Brutal.
He's hitting these guys.
Yeah. I wrote down stiff shots from Hawk to Sting because it was just like, I felt like I was watching All Japan. Like,
yeah.
He was laying it in the entire time.
Strong style. And like, I mean, Hawk was over there. That's why he did so good over there.
Oh, yeah. That's what, yeah.
Because, like, his whole thing was, like, they made it look so real because he's probably drunk. He's just hitting the fuck out of it. He doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly.
One of my favorite stories of the first War Games is when he gets in and just starts beating the shit out of everyone. And, like, one guy says to the other guy, just stay down. Like, let him get tired. Fuck.
Well, I think if I remember right, Hawk and Animal, they were bouncers originally. Yeah. Before they got into professional wrestling, they were recruited.
In my neck of the woods, they're from Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, and they were so good at beating the fuck out of people that they're like, all right, you want to do it for a living? Let's put some face paint on you.
Like, wait, you can do that?
Yeah.
What a rush.
Sticking with Paul Ellering, and it'll be amazing.
Yeah, fuck it. Hey, eventually, there'll be a puppet, but we'll get past that. Don't worry about it. Yeah. But, dark times coming. But this is so good. This match just fucking ruled. Everything about it was great. Even though,
Luger and I think... Luger and Animal or Luger and Hawk got in the ring together. And to me, it was like the 90s version of the meat chance we get nowadays.
Yep.
It was just like those beefy dudes, they were lined up against each other and everybody just exploded.
Oh my God.
This is wrestling.
And they gave it to us. Like Lex gets like a really awesome power slam on Animal. Mm-hmm. And like it's the two big dudes. It's so good. And it's a cookie cutter match.
I'm a Lex Luger booster too. He was one of my favorites.
And I'm seeing why. Like, he wasn't one of my favorites, but you understand why he was always there. He's solid. Yep. He really is good. Mm. And I love this match. And even though it's cookie cutter, it's good.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I've been saying off and on. Is like, even the cookie cutter stuff can be great if the cookies are great.
And it also is moving the story along of Sting and Lex. And I really love this concept. I just think it's a very fun storyline of like the babyface Sting, the heelish Luger that's winning these matches through cheating, and Sting just
behind his back. Yeah. He's doing it behind the back of his own part. And like at first, I was hating it because it was just weeks and weeks of this will they, won't they. And I was like, this is. But then this was the week I started to put together. I was like, oh no, he's doing it behind the ref's back. And Sting's back. That's funny.
Yeah.
And like, that's when I started go, oh, Sting's left like a confused little guy again. And that makes me funny. What? We won?
I know the whole history of Sting just being the dude who gets betrayed. And this is obviously setting up to it. But I thought it was handled well. You know, it's not subtly, maybe as subtly as like 90s wrestling could be, but I thought it was a fun way to progress the story towards that inevitable betrayal.
Exactly. And that's like in this moment, Jeff, in this week, I was like, I get it. Okay. Now I get it. Because absolutely. Like we've had guests say like X betraying Sting, like it's going to happen. This is a tale as old as time.
I genuinely think Darby Allin is the only person who has never betrayed Sting.
Yeah, holy shit. Which is wild because he's such an asshole.
No, exactly.
So it's like you think. So, like, the second possible reason that Peacock didn't show this, you mentioned it earlier, is the power went out for the whole building, I guess. I highly doubt that. I really think it was the fact. I really think it's that Ben.
No, that makes a lot more sense.
Skull open.
And it just popped. And I'm like, okay, what was something different? And obviously, this was the big kind of weird thing that happened. But like you said, it's not like it's something that hasn't occurred with other shows.
Yeah, so I'm not, I really think it's the Benoit shit, which this is the first time on our little adventure this has happened to us. So again, I just think it was I had a blast catching a Nitro on Daily Motion. I felt
without a doubt. Like the music and stuff, I'm like, that probably was the old like legit recording.
Yep. So the ref is trying to wrap up the match, pull the illegal guys off each other outside of the ring so that Jimmy Hart can do some cheating. He gets Animal's attention. Lex hits him in the back with the horn.
Jimmy got a little wrecked.
Jimmy got a little wrecked. Good. As he should. But, you know, they're still champs and Sting is confused. And I'm really, it's the confused puppy Sting's moment are starting to pop me. They bail and Gene has some talks with Hawk and Animal.
I love me some good like shouty promos too, and those guys.
Right. I wrote down, I'm listening closely as this is bound to be completely coherent.
But when it comes down to it,
you're right. The whole segment boils down to them walking up to the pool table and putting a quarter on the edge and calling next game against whoever yeah. has the belts after Super Brawl, basically. And I'm like, all right, they gotta get those belts, and I agree. Like, yeah. I absolutely agree. We go back to the boys at the booth to send us out of here, and they don't have a whole lot to say. Not a whole lot of nothing, but Pepe is a cutie, and that's Nitro.
And I, overall, I thought it was a good show. The schmazes to start it off, it was kind of like, all right. But again, I know I should expect that from what we are watching.
Yeah, I will say, though, like, it was a lot, even in the context of watching every week. I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
So, like, they lost points for me there. So who knows? Maybe I'll end up liking Raw more by the end of our conversation.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hey, guests have swayed me before, okay? I'm an open-minded gal. No intro to Raw this week, which I also was like, okay. I mean, that's... That's doing better because the intro sucks.
yeah, like, especially compared to like the Nitro intro, which is one of my favorites. That the projection with the fire and everything. I mean, that to me is iconic. That I saw that pop up when I forgot to mention it when we were first talking about it, but that drew me right in, the big projector on the wall intro.
And I've said it before, it never changes because it was never broken. And
no, you don't need to.
Yeah, you don't need to. It's fucking great. They've gone through so many different Raw intros because they can't figure it out.
A million. Yeah. And there's been some good ones, but nothing that ever hit the same way as the classic Nitro.
Yeah, and when we get into like Raw's War, they're gonna start hitting at all. But like right now, we're 23 episodes in, and all of them have just been like pulling goddamn teeth, like Isaac Yankum. Like I feel like I'm in the chair. Oh, it's awful. But this week though, none of that bullshit. Straight to Yokozuna and Bulldog. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I mean, I was stoked for this tag match. I love two dudes with attitude. I'm a big, big Yokozuna fan from back in the day. I love Bulldog. The whole Camp Cornette faction was kind of just like all the stuff I really liked at this time. They had Vader, they had Owen.
My favorite heels. They was like all my favorite heels in the same faction, like Vader, Owen, Bulldog, Yoko. I loved all these guys.
It was perfect.
You know, and Cornette's there. Yeah, sure.
He was an effective manager at the time.
Oh, yeah. No, folks, don't cancel me. I'm going to give Cornette praise when it's deserved, okay? Oh. I can't help it. He's awful, but god damn it. And like he'll never hear because he blocked me on Blue Sky. So you don't have to worry about it. God, that's he is on Blue Sky. He is on Blue Sky and he blocked me. And a few other people who saw that he was on Blue Sky decided to talk to him about his cuckoldry. And again, I say, if it's coerced, then it's just sparkling sexual assault, Jimmy. So like, it's not cool when you do it that way. Jesus.
Yeah.
That being but said,
he was an effective manager in this match.
Yeah, but he was an effective manager. Yes. So, like, this match is like, okay, whatever. Kevin Nash, though, looks bored as he gets in. I was just like, of course, he doesn't want to be here anymore, and I'm starting to see it.
You can tell he's starting to check out.
He is,
and again, this kind of goes back to what I was saying with the proto NWO. You can see the seeds of where all this stuff's coming.
You really can. The fact that as we'll see later, the pay-per-view coming up is going to have Razor versus 1-2-3 Kid in a baby bottle match.
Yeah. I literally had the thought, I'm like, is that why Scott Hall left? Because I wouldn't blame him.
Well, he's only doing that because he refused to keep doing the Gold Dust shit because he didn't want to be gay. So like he said, I have no fucking sympathy for Scott Hall.
No,
Kevin
Nash, maybe a little
bit. 1-2-3 Kid, very little. Maybe a little, but very. but like Scott Hall, whatever. You know, it sucks because like I've said before, like last week too, like I loved Razor, and I feel like we're getting this era as we were coming into these episodes where it's starting to fall apart was like best peak Razor. I've seen some matches from him doing this podcast where it's like I don't remember him having a better match than this after this, and it's just his life just started to fall apart after this.
Yeah, and even once he got in, well, even with NWO, WCW, I mean, it was an entertaining thing, but he wasn't, I couldn't say, like, there was this WCW Scott Hall match I loved. Like, there's a couple of outsiders matches that are good, but
I've heard a lot of people say that too. And when you think about it, it's like, yeah, everything, none of the stuff that was cool about NWO had anything to do with wrestling.
No, exactly. Yeah, it was presentation.
And that's great for them, but like he never had like another five-star classic in my mind.
No, you know? Without a doubt. Nothing like the ladder match he had with Sean or anything like that.
Which happened right before we started. So like this really is peak era. So like, yeah, Kevin Nash looks bored. The crowd's happy though.
Oh yeah,
they show us last week's fuckery that sets this up. In reality, probably happened earlier that evening. It's the same crowd. Sean and Diesel do a little rock paper scissors to see who goes first.
I thought that was cute.
I was gonna say that's cute. That's an amazing, adorable little
those
character.
Those two together, they do have quite the chemistry.
They do, and it makes sense. And I was like, I don't want to love it, but I kind of love it. Speaking of Sean,
shitty heel, like shitty HBK, but I love it.
Yeah, Sean and Bulldog, they take their turns working the crowd instead of wrestling. more character work. Sean does like a really ugly skinning the cat at one point, which
he's super bumping this whole match.
Yeah, and I just wrote down, though, which means that there is a pretty way to skin a cat, which is a weird thing to write down. But, yeah, wrestling, that the things you find yourself saying when you're a wrestling fan.
It is one of those terms where, like I was saying, with that common language of, like, I say skin a cat to you, it has an entirely different thing than, like, if I say it to my parents.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I said Sean skins the cat to someone who doesn't know wrestling, they'd be like, what the fuck are you watching?
That's the waitress walking up at the wrong moment kind of thing.
It's a thing he does with the ropes. You had to be there.
And then you see their eyes glaze over as you're explaining it.
Yeah, and they're like, never mind, kid. I don't care. Yeah. Do you want
I would prefer
coffee?
If you were talking about animal mutilation.
Yeah, right. But Yoko is right. Speaking of animal mutilation, he comes up from it and Yoko's right behind him. Good stuff. Yeah. Mutilates him. Diesel for the save, though, and the heels are out of the ring soon. It's kind of a boring match. Like cookie cutter doesn't always mean bad, but this did nothing for me. Like this match just did little for me.
I did like there was a spot where Sean got thrown into the heels by Diesel that I thought was cute. There's like little bits where I was like, okay, that was pretty clever. But yeah, by the numbers.
I did write that down. That's cinema.
I
love when big guy pick up little guy throw. this pleases a Garrick. Yes.
It worked well.
That's always going to get 4 stars right off the bat. When you pick up a little guy, I love me a fastball special. Vince lets us know that despite the threat of legal action, they will show us one more Billionaire Ted sketch. Oh, thank God. Thank you, Vince.
I literally wrote, oh, God, not Billionaire Ted. Like, I forgot that this was this time, and I was like, oh, shit.
By my count, this bit has lasted 2 months.
It is atrocious. I mean, we'll get to it.
Yeah, we've been there for everyone listening along, but holy shit. It's coming to a merciful end.
Being a fucking petulant baby.
Just a little whiny baby boy with a diaper, much like the match he's booking. Again, he's just projecting. Oh, I'm good.
I mean, to get to, like, overall with the show, like, the problem is where you could feel Vince seeping in. And it's the baby stuff. It's the Billionaire Ted. Like, when that happened, that's when it took me out. Overall, I liked it. You know, and like I said, I'm jumping ahead here, but... Yeah, that's even just the second that Billionaire Ted preview bit came up, I was just put my hand in my face or my face in my hand. I was like, Jesus.
It's so bad. And I remember it from watching bits of it on VHS tapes for pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time that I've seen it all in linear order, you know?
No, without a doubt.
Holy shit, I can't believe they did that for 2 months. We come back from commercial, though. Sean's still getting the shit beat out of him like Sean does, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, super
yep, the supercell that he picked up from Flair Boy. And he does a thing where he does the gimmick where he gets hit and he spits the gum out of his mouth while selling the hit from Yoko, and Lawler's like, his tooth went flying.
It's classic.
Classic wrestling magic is what that is. And we get nice classic Yoko needs a breather hold as he lovingly hits Sean's neck for a few minutes.
I was, at least he, this is the only time he did it all match. I was kind of surprised. He was pretty active. Relative for Yoko at this point.
Yeah, because Yoko is definitely the last few bits with him has been very much he's not doing.
I was kind of surprised how much he did during this match.
It was pretty great, which sucks, though, that like the whole match comes to an end basically with a fat joke. After some heat building, Sean is back in, hitting a splash on Yoko. Bulldog goes for a leg drop to break it up, and Sean moves so that he hits Yoko, which is like a nice callback to last week where it was the opposite. And I was like, all right, that's cool storytelling. But then they roll him out, and Owen and Bulldog can't lift him up fast enough to break the ten count. And I'm like, God damn it, Vince.
That's classic Vince.
He's a fat piece of shit. Ain't that great?
And you know, that's just like, oh, we can have countouts because he's too fat to get back in the ring.
And they're just giggling to themselves about it. Oh, yeah. God damn it.
Basically, just killing Rodney out of Hawaii.
Yeah, you son of a fucking bitch. All right. And he's never going to go to jail now. And that's great, Jeff. And I'm thinking about it again.
He'll probably get a fucking cabinet position.
His wife is. Yeah. It appears Corny is mad at Yoko now, and I think he's going to fire him for being a big boy, and this tracks. Yeah. So we, in fact, get a Yoko face turn, and I'm into
it. That was well done.
Very well. He sends Cornette flying. All is right with the world.
Yoko's facial expressions when Cornette was yelling at him.
You see him get close to breaking, and it's like,
it sold pretty well, and people were behind it.
Oh, fuck it, as they should be. Rodney is amazing. And, he really did a great job on this. I love that he did the guys start beating on him, and he does, the giant flailing him off move. And it's
that looked cool.
No, excellent. Very, very
good. Then he had to chase him to the back, and it just kind of fell apart.
And then it kind of okay, he did all this, but he can't run. And I'm like, as someone who also can't run, I get it, buddy. I get it.
But no, I thought it worked well. The conclusion of the match, I was pretty happy with.
All in all, other than the fat joke of it, I was pretty happy with it.
The angle, I was pretty cool.
The angle was all right. But then commercial over, and it's more Foley time.
it popped me. I mean, Mankind, he's one of my favorite things. I remember being a kid and it's just also terrified of the dude.
Oh, yeah. So scary, but I loved him, and I also wanted a pet rat. Smoke machine. They just do the smoke machine and the missing ear again. He says this is his new hardcore home. Lawler makes an eerie pun.
Yeah.
Because of that. And then Vince lets us know to watch Silk Stockings tonight after Raw. And I am flung back in a time machine of horny. I was like, wow, this is fan. Okay, I remember that. That's weird.
We weren't to Nikita yet. It was still
Yeah, it was not La Femme Nikita yet. And it was like, you came Silk Stockings. It's like, I feel like I'm supposed to like this, but I want the spy intrigue too. Can we do something with that? And they figured it out for me, and that was great. Also, I wanted her outfits, but that's an entirely different thing.
But I had the same nostalgia, just like, the previews, just that popping up every Monday night.
Exactly, every time. And I love when, I was like, oh my god, I felt like I was doing the Leo pointing at the screen. He said Silk Stockings, I remember that, I was there. All this distracted me from Hakushi and Baby Bottle 1-2-3 Kid happening, and
I popped for it. These are two of my, I'm a work rate person.
Yeah.
I love spots. I love crazy, big. I would much rather see somebody do huge splashes to the outside than Undertaker put a fucking chokehold on for 5 minutes. So I saw these two come out. I was like, oh, okay, awesome. I'm in.
Oh, yeah. And I love Hakushi.
He's one of my favorites.
I will not let how much I hate Sean Waltman take away from how much I love Hakushi. Sean's on Blue Sky now. So if you want to ask him what the fuck was up with the baby bottle shit, you can. So go ahead and do that, listeners. Sean, what was up with the baby bottle?
These are two guys who really were setting the stage for the style that was going to come 10, 15 years later. This is where the indie style came from.
Absolutely. And this is WWF at the time's trying to show it, whereas WCW was really laying into it.
Yeah, this was and WWF was weird. They would have Taka Michinoku as their champion for a little bit, and they would bring
That comes later. They did a light heavyweight title, and that was in response to the fact that Nitro was starting to do cruiserweight.
Yeah, that's right. They would have this good work rate stuff just kind of snuck in.
Yep, and it's still in the sneaking in stage at this point, especially in the Fed. So this match was great for that. I hate to keep putting them together, though, because they're trying to sell that they're both martial artists. And I'm like, no. Sean Waltman has, like, a blue belt from Taekwondo that you get at, like, a Reseda fucking strip mall.
Every time he does a move and he does his little, like...
which, I'm sorry, just feels racist to me. a little bit. It's just like, dude, that's not... No. Like, at least do, like, an actual kata or something. Yeah. Like, you look like a fucking asshole. he's the Cobra Kai of martial artists.
I like that with his heel run now. Because he gives you shit to boo him for. Because he looks like a little dork.
Yes, because he's a little dork.
Cool shit too.
Yeah, he did have some good stuff, and Hakushi had a great time with him.
Oh yeah.
This match, it wants to suck, but Hakushi won't let it. Is how I put it. His kicks are just too good. He does like a thrust kick to Sean's throat that looked like it would have taken my head off. That
was beautiful.
So good. They mentioned touring India, and Vince makes a Taj Mahal reference. Waller says Trump gave him a tour of the Taj Mahal.
Or the casino or whatever it was.
Yeah, and they proceed to have to explain the joke that he means the original, not like Sydney. I'm just like, guys, if you have to explain, never mind.
It's not worth it.
At least the wrestling fucks is what.
Yeah, I think sometime around this, Hakushi hits that like interceptor drop kick after Waltman comes off the top. And I was just like, am I watching like 2015 PWG now?
Yeah, there's like slingshot sentons from Sean Wall to the outside. I'm like, all right.
We're cooking a little here.
Yeah, let him cook. Yeah, so like after the commercial break, sure enough, Hakushi drop kicks him out of the midair in a bangery fashion. I find myself happy again. exactly. He sets him up. He gets that handspring elbow that we love so much. Right, only good for two, but eventually gets himself in for the springboard splash to the outside, and like 4 seconds later, they do a replay of it, and Vince says, "Welcome back. Look at this, as though it happened over the commercial break."
There was a point where Hakushi was setting up. It looked like a Sasuke special, like he was doing the back handspring, and Waltman moving to the side, and him having to readjust. And I was like, "That was a nice little touch. Like it could kind of cutting the momentum for him." And I'm like, that's some good heelish stuff from Waltman.
Yeah, no, like I very much have to begrudgingly give it to him this match. Like very much, and all the way up to the end, because sure enough, he goes up top for a flying headbutt like he does, but the kid catches him with a dropkick again, goes up and he sends him flying with the avalanche butterfly suplex for the three.
That was a hell of a finish.
Like where did that come from, Sean?
Like, I honestly don't even know what his finisher was at the time, but if it's that's crazy.
Not that. I think it might have been like a shooting star press maybe or something. I don't even know. Some high flyer shit. But
it felt like
that.
Vince was like, okay, you guys got 10 minutes. And they're like, all right, well, let's just go fucking crazy. Kind of reminded me of the King of the Ring match that Kid had with Owen Hart that was like, it's like a 4-minute match, but it's one of the craziest matches for the time where they just go all out with what they got.
Yep. And I remember that match as well, where Owen's like, you know, they got you in this thing, but like, you can work. Like, let's show them that you can work.
Yeah. We're just going to cram every cool thing we can in.
Bless Owen.
I was bummed. I wrote down, I'm like, I actually might go on to watch in your house after this just because. It has HBK versus Owen on it.
And that's going to be a great match.
Oh,
that's not.
Yeah, but Owen's an all-timer for me.
Me too, very much so. Moment of sadness. Anyway. Clarence Mason and Cornette say they're going to sue Vader for Vader, and they show us Vader's replay of his various crimes, which was great. And then we get Gorilla in a neck brace using medical words so that we all know he is actually.
I wrote down Gorilla technical jargon.
He
mentioned the occipital protuberance or whatever it was.
He's leaving wrestling. He's getting on ER. but Gorilla, being the gentleman, he apologizes for his lack of decorum when Vader was assaulting him. And this is why we have chicken shit liberals. Fuck decorum, Gorilla. You should have ate him like a banana. We get a long, slow Undertaker entrance. Crowd loves it.
I still pop for the music, though.
Yeah, they love it even though he's the heel because he's he's
that classic Taker. Undertaker look of the purple gloves and the purple boots. This is kind of prime Taker, at least in terms of presentation, like for this time.
Yeah, and like you can't help but love him because it's just so cool that you're seeing this this zombie. Yeah.
Paul Bearer always brings a smile to my face.
Naturally. But the Canadian national anthem hits and then they go fucking shit nuts. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, they like you, Taker, but they don't like you.
No,
like you.
Like, they like Brett you. Is our God.
Brett is God at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, so this is them running back from a pay-per-view match they had that ended in fuckery, of course.
Yeah.
For some reason, I doubt this won't end in fuckery. but we'll see. I have very little notes for this match because, like, nothing happens for most of it. It's just slow as molasses. Yeah,
it's Brett working a leg and Taker doing his, you know, greatest slow ass hits.
Oh, I wrote it. It's like Brett's fighting some sort of undead zombie or something.
Which, and I mean, logically, it's a Bret Hart match, so it makes sense. He's trying to work the limb to take down the bigger guy, and especially with him. Leg. Yeah, he's going up against Nash at the pay per view. It's setting up for what he's gonna do. He is. You know, chopping down the tree.
Chopping down the big man, yeah.
Yeah.
Almost like awkward. Speaking of Nash, yeah. Diesel comes out to imply fuckery, basically.
Yeah.
But also sits a commentary.
Anytime the challenger for the next match comes out for commentary, you know they're not just chill until the end.
I giggle, though, because it's like, let's have Kevin Nash talk. I'm like, okay. He says he's, I'm going to have a bird's eye view, but he's just like drop jawed watching the ring silently.
Yeah.
And he kind of looks
a quip
like
here and there, but it's going to say nothing that really worked.
He looked like a cat, like when my cat's watching birds through the window outside, it's just, they make little noises at him. Diesel says you can say one thing about Bret Hart. He sure knows how to take a beating. And Vince is like, Jess, you fucking wait for the 1997 I got planned for that. You have no idea. I'm going to ruin his whole family. but we get back from commercial to a very pretty side suplex from Taker. I'll give him that. But like
that did look good.
Else, but like everything else, at halftime,
I think it's like the only
back slowly.
One of the only actual moves he really hit the entire match to. It was like that and old school and then choking.
Just ridiculous. Vince gets himself super worked up retelling Diesel the last couple weeks as if he isn't right next to him. Like, yeah, oh yeah, I fucked up Diesel. I'm a little shit. It's just nothing from Diesel, just silence. Yeah. And like he gets all worked up. That, and finally he says, "You says a cold day is in hell. I heard it was like -70 in hell."
That line did not.
That's pretty cool, And like, Vince does not know what to do with this stone ass.
Well, it's like, it doesn't need to be a cold day in hell today. It needs to be on the pay-per-view.
And you hear him like seething as he's trying to like not yell at him for just being ridiculous.
And it's like, Nash is genuinely like a pretty cool guy, but God, his trying to be cool does not work. And that is very much what the Diesel character was.
It worked for me in that I found anything that upsets Vince pleases me.
Oh, that is genuinely pleasant, yes.
and like, you could tell he was just like this fucking guy. Like, he's just sitting there like, I made this guy champion. What the fuck was I thinking? God. So yeah, Brett keeps rapping.
Replace him with fucking Kane soon enough anyway.
Yeah. Need another big, I'll find another tall dude with long hair. Meanwhile, Timmy White, the ref, gets knocked out for fun because he loves it. Timmy's always getting knocked out. It's his one of his favorite pastimes. Brett just keeps working as though nothing happened, though, because that's Brett. He's like, I'm going to keep wrapping Taker's knee around this pole. Yeah, I got a match to do here. I got a sharpshooter, this guy. So, yeah.
Work the leg. Stu's yelling out from Canada somewhere.
Work the leg, Brett. Stretch him. So, like, Diesel's like, well, fuck it. The ref's out. Let's ball. And he attacks Brett from behind. Taker gets mad because that's his meat. And he sends Diesel into the ring steps. So Diesel
I'm the only
says,
big plotting guy in this match. Come on.
So Diesel says, hey, I saw Terry do this on Nitro. Let's go. And he runs at him with a steel chair to the back. Ref is still napping while he jackknives Taker in the center of the ring.
Which I will say, those jackknives looked pretty. For a man Taker size, those looked pretty slick, I thought.
They were pretty. Like, you know, I've often said, like, whatever with the jackknife powerbomb is just a power.
Yeah.
No, those ones look devastating.
Like, and the multiple in a row, I was like, that actually connected pretty well.
That worked for me. Because, like, he tried, and I love the storytelling with this where he jackknifes him and he instantly tries to get up and do his sit-up, yeah. But he's too weak because it fucked him up so bad. And he's like a malfunctioning robot, you know?
Exactly.
So Diesel gets
him. And Taker actually, he sold a little bit during this match. Like I saw him stumble on the leg a couple times. And yeah. I was like, okay, we're doing some wrestling here.
He's learning. Yeah. 6 years in, he's figuring it
exactly.
out.
Exactly. Just give him like five more. He'll have a great Mania match and then a few more. And that's all anyone will ever talk about.
Yeah. And that'll be fine. And now he has a podcast. Great. Diesel gets him another one to really keep the witch down, make sure he doesn't move. Crowd boos. He gets out of the ring, lets everyone just be dead, basically. And yeah. They go to the commercial. When the commercial comes back, they show us, though, that Hart got up and hit Diesel a bit. Vince called it a melee broke out.
Yeah.
Melee. I loved Super Smash Brothers melee myself.
Melee. What do you call it when you put a bunch of flowers around your own neck?
A melee. I like that one. Apparently, they just left it at that, though, and just called
it was
the match.
Weird. They ended the match on weird. During the commercial. But...
Yeah, and again, you guys aren't live. You could be doing this better.
You can edit this however you want. But
they're choosing to edit this so poorly, and it will always make me mad that they choose to suck at this.
It's these early days where it's just like, you guys really don't know what the fuck you're doing, do you?
Yeah, but you know, Jeff, you're not remembering what's important here. Mm. They have to get past all this bullshit so they can get to the last Billionaire Ted sketch.
Every match, I was like, okay, that's over. At least they'll do the Billionaire Ted thing. We can get that out of the way. It'll be done soon. And then it got to Taker start coming out, and I was like, they're ending the show with Billionaire Ted. I was like, no fucking way.
And the reason they had to is so fucked. So, like, okay, we'll get into it. Let's get right into this shit.
Yeah, the sooner we do, the sooner it's over.
Yeah, Vince, literally, Vince just projecting. He says he doesn't mind that Ted doesn't mind that he's wasting money because he's having fun and it's his plaything. That is literally Vince. They're action figures to him. That's how Vince books his show. It's like he's playing.
It is just the most, like, insane straw man. Straw man doesn't even come close to, like, it is literally just like, I'm going to dress up one of my guys like you and have him call himself a bad person on TV. Like, fucking, like, 10 minutes.
For two months, he did that. And all saying stuff that is true about him himself.
Exactly. Like, no awareness.
Oh, my God. And some guys will literally ruin the country's politics over the course of 30 years instead of going to therapy.
Exactly.
Awful. So, yeah, Ted says he wants money and power so that his dad can kiss his ass in heaven. And again, Vince, I see you, baby.
Like, all of this, to me, a lot of this could be forgiven if any of this was funny.
None of it is at all funny.
It's not even a joke. It is just like, I suck. That's it.
And also, I hate my dead dad, and you know, nothing that Vince McMahon knows anything about.
Yeah. Especially the fucking Hogan and Macho Man caricatures with it.
Yeah, and just snapping into Slim Jims.
Yeah,
and
Vince, what the fuck are you doing, man?
I just can't. And like, it's so wild that it's just all so blatant, just him like talking about his own insecurities through this Billionaire Ted. Mm-hmm. And then they cut to an ad that they tried to run.
What the fuck was that?
That was rejected by the papers, probably because it's
serious?
Fucking sad and ridiculous.
Yeah. And he's being censored. Yeah,
letting us know that he's being censored. And that's why this had to be at the end
for some reason. Like,
yeah, no, and that's why it had to be at the end is so that he could get serious. But we like to have fun here. But seriously, folks, I'm being oppressed.
They won't let me call him a prick in the newspaper.
Like, they won't let me lie to his stockholders and say that they lost $40 million because he has a personal vendetta against me. He did this shit.
Yeah,
and that's right.
my jaw was dropped by the end. Because I enjoyed the show up until that point, and then I was just like, mother of God.
It really, you know, you sold me. It really wasn't that bad of a Raw until that shit, and it just ruined it.
Yeah, it's such a sour note. Like, everything up till then I was pretty happy with, but it was just like,
you know, even the stuff that annoyed me wasn't that bad this week. Yeah. And then he did that, and I'm just angry. I'm just angry.
There were no jobber squad. Like, each match was kind of a legit match. I mean, the tag to start was solid. The, like I said, Kushi 1-2-3 was one of my favorite matches I've watched from this period.
And that's where the jobber match would have gone. Generally, and like, instead we got Hakushi in a really great match.
And even Brett versus Taker worked, even if it wasn't like anything out of this world. It's set up for the pay-per-view. I mean, the ending angle was pretty cool with the power bombs. I was happy.
All right, well, you know what, fuck linear time, we're switching it around. Are you saying that you feel Raw won the week?
Out of them, I felt Raw engaged me more. I don't know. I never felt bored. Even at the end, I wasn't bored. I was just pissed off. With Nitro, I was kind of in and out of it, and I was just like, this just isn't clicking with me. With Nitro, the thing that really clicked, I liked the WCW stuff. I liked Flair and Bagwell, but when it was doing this rehashed Hogan stuff, it really just lost me. Did not click for me.
I think you might have turned me. I think I might have liked this Raw up until the end.
I mean, if you cut the billionaire's head off,
it would have been pretty solid. But I will say, for me, my match of the week, though, is on Nitro.
Okay.
Macho Man and Benoit fucked harder than it should have. In my opinion, I was blown away by how good that match was, considering when I first saw that it was happening, I did not know how it was going to go.
Yeah.
And even with the fuckery at the end, I was like, this is great. Like,
and every Nitro match I thought was good. Like, even with the Dungeon of Doom versus the Horsemen, it was solid up until the fuckery. Flair versus Bagwell was a very, very fun match. The tag match, he did his job.
But everything ended in a schmoz. Everything was all schmoz, and that kind of, you're right, it kind of undercut
how much. And with all those matches being good, none of them I thought was great like I thought Hakushi 1-2-3 was.
Is that your match of the week?
That's definitely my match of the week. I could not pick anything else.
You hear that, Walden?
I don't have a problem with Waldman.
I have problems with Waldman.
I'm learning this, but I always thought he was a trailblazer, and to me, this worked very well. And Hakushi, he carried it.
Okay, well, yeah, and I mean, I love me some fucking Hakushi. Maybe it'll be a Mongo situation, and I will get flipped by the end of this. I'll be an X-Pac fan again. I did hate me some X-Pac. I was a DX kid, but this 1-2-3 vision is killing me.
It does fall apart. The character falls apart, but I always thought he was at least above average to good in terms of his in-ring work.
There you go. And sure enough, the fake martial art fuckery, I think, is the biggest problem I have.
That's understandable. That is very understandable. And like I said, I almost like it with the heel thing, because it gives me something to be like, all right, just fuck you.
Gives me a reason to fucking hate him. Well, fuck
this guy. But then he'll bump like a boss, and I'm like, okay, I'm back in.
Yeah, no, you sold me. You sold me.
I'm the great negotiator. What can I say?
and we're so happy that you joined us to negotiate me out of hating Raw.
Waldman sending me a check. Come on.
And I'm gonna have to. Yeah, I was gonna say they owe you money, not me. They do. Sean Waldman, pay the man, pay the mongoose. But thank you for coming. It was a pleasure having you. Is there anything you want the people to know about, where they can find you being funny on the internet if you want them to?
I am genuinely pretty much only on Blue Sky. I've got a Twitter account that I don't use. I've got a TikTok account I don't use. If you want to see me on Blue Sky, I try and be funny at least once a day. I don't always succeed, but when I don't,
I don't know. You get me at least one or two. I'm biased. I'm a big Mongoose fan.
No, I have a lot of fun on there, and there's a great wrestling community. And honestly, this was just an absolute blast. I had so much fun talking wrestling with you, Garrett. If anyone out there ever wants me to come talk wrestling with them, I'm available, because this was one of the highlights of my life.
Excellent. Yes. No, have the Mongoose on your pod to talk graps. It went well. It wasn't awkward at all. No. And hey, sometimes it can be. I'm an awkward kid.
No, we had fun. I think we had some good chemistry. But yeah, and people out there, anything Garrett does, support, follow. It's just one of the coolest people I know. And I'm glad to be involved.
I'm just here for the goofs and the graps, kids.
You're fantastic.
And speaking of, you can find those goofs and graps, you folks listening, on B-Sky, the Blue Skies, at mnffpod.bsky.social. Instagram that exists, but I rarely use. It is still getting updated occasionally at mnffpod for some reason. And you can join us for the pay-per-view watch parties at Patreon, patreon.com/mnffpod. Otherwise, we will see you folks next week for more Raw versus Nitro on the Monday Night Fake Fights. Okay, bye.